listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
You know, how we manage change in our lives is increasingly important. Many years ago, I heard from Lazarus of Concept Synergy, before change, chaos. After change, chaos. We're all going through a time of great change now, and it's important we work out how to manage chaos. My guest today experienced the change of the death of her brother, who was also her best friend, and the death of her father only 4 months later. She's written a novel exploring how the change created by loss affects us and what we hold on to as we surf through chaos. Hopefully we surf through it. Moments in Time author Nina Payne is my guest today. We are dedicated to awakening the world to the power and importance of human emotions. You're listening to us on emotionalpro.com's radio show page, on blogtalkradio.com/FPL, or through subscription on iTunes or on our archives. And we also have a chat for you during this live show. That's 888-498-0570, 888-498-0570. Well, Nina C. Payne is a poet, novelist, wife, a mother of two, and a registered yoga instructor. And before her current life, she was managing a fast-paced financial services company. But after the birth of her first child in 1998, she left the corporate world to raise her children and discovered her passion for yoga. Her love of yoga goes beyond physical postures. She finds great pleasure in studying the philosophy, psychology, and physiology of yoga. She also has a passion for reading, music, hiking, rainforests, cooking, and long walks on the beach. You can find her on the web at ninacpayne.com. That's N-I-N-A-C. P as in Paul, A-Y-N-E.com, ninacpayne.com. So, Nina Payne, welcome to Full Power Living.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure being here.
It was a pleasure reading your book, too. It's a good first novel.
I appreciate that.
Good. Well, Moments in Time, which is the name of that novel, was inspired by your own real life experiences. And what I wanted to know, is whether your impetus to write your book was a way for you to process those losses, or had you already processed?
No, I hadn't already processed. As a matter of fact, when I had first started to write the book, it had been a year after my brother's death. It was actually the week that we went to, there was a couple of weeks that we spent in Boston, and one of those weeks was the anniversary of my brother's death, and I was down to 89 pounds. I was not eating. I was not sleeping. I was just in the depths of despair, and something happened to me while we were in Boston. A poem that I had written years back, the last line of that poem read, "My dear friend, in the simplicity of life, all the opposites are equal." And that kept resonating with me, and I wondered why. And then it occurred to me, I thought, wow, if I can be this far in despair, if I can be feeling grief this deep, then the opposite of that had to be true. A love, an awakening, and a blossoming, a joy like I've never experienced before. And for the first time in a year, I had hope. And I believed and I had faith that around the corner, if I did the right things that I needed to do, the things that nurtured my soul, I would make it there and I would be on the other side of grief. But first I had to learn to stop resisting, to embrace the grief, to walk with pain, and it was my companion for a while. Then when we came back from Boston, I started writing. And once those floodgates opened, I could not stop. It was 4 to 5 months of constant writing. It was like something came over me. And I thought I was going to write a story about my brother and I and our journey together, because like you had mentioned, he was my best friend. And it turned out to be a novel that was, it has my brother's story intertwined in there. And again, a lot of real life experiences, because I think as writers, we draw from our experiences. And then a novel was born, Moments in Time. So like Stephen King says, fiction is the truth between the lies. Even though there's lies in there, so to speak, the emotions are authentic. The emotions are real throughout the story.
Mm. So the story, briefly, is about Cassandra Payton, who's a mother of two and a yoga instructor. And she takes on a central role in helping her brother, Andy, who is diagnosed with cancer. And as she works with that, like, she becomes the main person looking after his treatment. And as she works with that, she's also swept up by a charismatic yoga instructor who takes a fancy to her and she to him. And one of the things that came up as I was reading your book, I wondered whether you are aware of the lessons you wanted to share with your reading audience as you were writing.
You know, I really wasn't. It just flowed out of me from a place from deep within. And I wasn't even aware of the lessons that I would learn until much later. And it's interesting, as I'm writing the sequel to it now, I've learned so much. And I think the lessons that I've learned are really drawn out in the sequel. And the reader who has read Moments in Time and chooses to read the sequel will look back and go, oh my goodness, I saw that. Oh, and they'll be able to relate to it in a different way. So it's very interesting how the progression has happened.
You know, I was in therapy with a very great therapist many years ago. And I used to go, well, what's going to happen here? How are things going to turn out? Why is this happening? And she would say, you can't know the why, usually until long after you've gone through it. So that sounds like part of what you are noticing as you're writing again.
Yes, you know, and that's brilliant. That's a brilliant statement. It's so true. And it's almost like I wrote this one blog that sometimes we may never even know the why. And it's life is not, I've realized, it's not a test. It's all of our experiences, and it's how we choose to respond to those experiences. People often ask me, do you think things happen for a reason? Well, I think things happen to show us more of who we are. And it's either we're going to rise up, and it's how we rise up. Are we going to rise up in our full presence and our full integrity and make choices that nurture us rather than bring us down and keep us down? So we always have that choice of how we're going to come up and how we're going to face challenges. We're all going to face them in life. I mean, that's a given. And the sooner we accept that and the inevitability of loss, that's going to happen. Grief is going to happen. To embrace it. It's part of our life. It's part of our life experience. It's part of what's going to help us to grow and evolve if we choose to grow and evolve.
You know, I have a smile on my face listening to you. I totally agree with what you're saying. My husband is ill, and we have people who have been helping me to care for him, home health people. And one of them is in the process of relocating to another state. And when my husband found out she was going, he said, oh, I feel like God is against me. And I said, no, God's not against you. This is life. This is what happens in life. Change happens in life, you know?
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, some people think that having no attachment to certain things means not caring. No, the opposite is true. When we attach and cling to things instead of recognizing the impermanence of everything, relationships, everything evolves, everything transforms. And as long as we don't cling to that, then suffering tends to dissipate. It tends to go away, and we open ourselves to the next. The unexcitement replaces fear. You know, the unknown isn't fearful anymore.
Right. I agree with you. And that takes me into the next question I wanted to ask you. Because Cassandra, your protagonist, prides herself even in her yoga and being disciplined and controlled, and says she's probably one of the few people who feels like she needs Xanax on her way to yoga. I like that quote. And she doesn't let her guard down except to those who are very closest to her. But in bringing this up, you bring up the question for your reader, at least that's where it took me, of how much control we actually have in our lives. And talk to me a little bit more about control as you've been looking at it.
Well, the way I've been looking at it lately is the only thing I have control over is myself and my responses. And I don't like to use the word reaction. That's the only thing I have control over. I can't control what anybody does. I can't control what anybody says. And I've let go of seeking approval. I've let go of other people's expectations of me, which has helped me to become a more calm, centered, balanced person and a more confident person in who I am and a less structured. And I believe that, yes, I still have discipline, but I think through the discipline, there's freedom. You know, through my mm-hmm. discipline and my practice of yoga, it gives me freedom. Through my discipline and practice with my children, I have a lot more freedom to interact with them in a way that's completely present and completely whole. But in terms of living up to others' expectations and to what other people believe I should be, I've let go of all of that, or society standards, or where my children should go to college, or, you know, all those things, all those shoulds. I've tried to eliminate that from my life. And just stay, all we have, and it's like my book, Moments in Time, all we have is this moment in time. We're not promised mm-hmm. anything else.
Yes. Well, I'm totally in agreement with you. I think our philosophy, and I like to hike too. I think our philosophy mm-hmm. is very, very close. One of the things that interests me is the way you created Cassandra's best friend, as Mark, who is a great friend of the family, but who is also a gay man. And I was interested in your motivation to make her best friend a gay man. I've known a lot of women who really like gay men and enjoy their company, but I haven't seen that in a novel very much.
Well, that's interesting because my best friend is a gay man. Uh-huh. I guess I drew from that. And he's just a rock and uh-huh. someone who's been very steady for me and has always. And the thing that I loved about Mark's character, which very much reflects my relationship with my friend, is that it's one of the closest relationships that I've ever experienced that is without conditions. And understanding that philosophy of, you know, you're going to do things that I may not necessarily agree with, but I'm not going to judge you for it, but I'm going to be here for you should you fall. And mm-hmm. that's kind of the way I was depicting Mark, using my friend Mike as a muse, because the relationship is very similar. And so I drew from my experiences with him, and it made me just appreciate that friendship so much more. Friendship should be, all relationships should be as much as possible. And I know it's one of the most difficult things for us to do is to try not to judge, because everyone has their own story and everyone's going to experience it in their own way. And everybody is going to respond to it in their own way. It may not be the way we would do it, but if it's a true friendship and it's a true love, then we support and we encourage. And when they fall, we pick up.
Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm thinking as you're talking that certainly matters of race or sexual orientation lead to or have traditionally led to a lot of judgmentalism. And what I'm thinking about is if I were in the position of being in a category that's a category of personhood that's often judged, that I would have two ways to go. Either I would perhaps get judgmental back, or I could be catapulted into really understanding the pain of being judged and becoming non-judgmental. And I'm finding myself appreciating your friend for going that direction.
Yes, yes. And, you know, it's interesting. I'm working on a blog now. And one of the things in there that I've written says judgment is, you know, non-judgment is not a buffet. It's not an all-you-can-eat buffet where you can pick and choose. You have to try to be that way in every aspect. And that does mean embracing, you know, all different walks of life and all different ways of thinking and being in this world. And there's not one truth. There's no absolute truth. And for us to judge a person based on their sexual orientation, their religious belief, their, you know, whatever preferences they may have, is really not coming from a place of love. It's coming from a place of fear. And it doesn't mean we have to agree, but we can agree to disagree in a way that's loving and compassionate and with kindness.
I find myself wanting to be a little tongue in cheek here and ask you if you've thought of running for political office, because I think we could use some of that.
Well, thank you for that. That's a compliment.
Well, in fact, Cassandra seemed to get along better men than the women in her life. She didn't get along too well with her sister Allison, but she's extremely close with her brother Andy, and through working with his illness gets closer to her brother William. The other thing that was really outstanding to me was that the men in her life were sensitive to her emotional needs. They took it into account, each dealt with it in his own way, but including her husband Stephen. But they were very sensitive, and I appreciated that.
Yes, there is such a sensitivity to men, and you know, I think again, there's a lot of stereotypes. I do think that men and women do approach things in a different way, but I do believe in many ways, I think we're all the same, and we all have the same wants of wanting to connect and wanting to feel loved and appreciated and respected. And the way we receive that and the way we give that is by not thinking so much about our own needs, but how does that person, and this was one of the main components in dealing with my brother and his illness, how does he need me to be there for him? Not how do I think he needs me to be there for him. How does he actually need me to be there for him? And so turning it around and viewing it from that lens really helped me in my relationships with those around me and in my relationship with my brother in dealing with this illness. So it's really putting their needs at the forefront. And again, it's that judgment issue of, you know, instead of saying, what do I need? How can I be there for them in a way that they need? And then it's reciprocated back. You're given back what you put out. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, you know, we're up to our first break right now. I've got a lot more questions, of course, but let's take a break. My guest today is Nina Payne. She's the author of a novel, Moments in Time. When one heart opens, two hearts collide. And we'll be talking about what it really takes to keep the bonds of family and friendship strong when we return right here on Full Power Living.
Do you know that emotionally, children form the foundation for their life during their first 7 years? Most adults just repeat that early emotional learning, good or bad, over and over for the rest of their lives. If you want to give your child an opportunity to live an emotionally masterful life, then join me, Eileen Dillon, also known as the Emotional Pro, for a free one-hour teleseminar on what it takes for your child to become an emotional master. You'll discover important things like what emotions are designed to do for us. 4 things it's vital for parents to tell their children about emotions, and the single most important thing to do when someone is feeling emotion. Register now at RaiseIncredibleKids.com. The time has come for us to allow emotions their rightful place in our lives as the tools and helpers they're created to be. Find out what you need to know in order to give this vital information to your children so they can live emotionally masterful lives. Go now to RaiseIncredibleKids.com for your free Emotional Mastery Teleseminar.
All right, welcome back to Full Power Living. I have a few announcements. We would love it if you would sign up for our mailing list on emotionalpro.com so we can send you our bi-weekly newsletter telling you about our programs. And speaking of programs, next week I'm talking with my friend Steve Siskold, who has a brand new book called Whole Body Intelligence. He's worked with the remarkable and amazing powers of our own body for many years, and he's got some simple yet powerful ways you can improve the workings of your brain by listening to your body. That's 9 a.m. Pacific time next Thursday, August 20th. We also want to thank you for helping us with our mission of transforming our world through the mastery and power of human emotions. and invite you while you're on the Emotional Pro homepage to click through and find out more about the CCFL Global Academy. That's a membership site. We're helping parents to nurture their children for life in our very changing world. I want you to know I serve as emotional mastery expert and also as expert on codependence for the Academy. And also, while you're on emotionalpro.com, get the free list of the signals of 7 everyday emotions, which I have there for you to download. Today, I'm talking with Nina C. Payne, who is a poet, novelist, wife, mother of 2, and registered yoga instructor. And Nina, it's interesting. As I was writing these questions, I was mixing the two of you up. It must be very close. I want to talk to you about the fact that some of the people you portray in your book, like Cassandra or Mark, seem to be really good at helping other people through the very same kinds of issues that they themselves struggle with. Mm-hmm. Like Mark helped Cassandra getting perspective on her relationship with Daniel, but simultaneously he was struggling with a relationship he had with Greg in which he wasn't being treated well. And yeah. Cassandra was helping her brother Andy at the same time to get things straight for his life, at the same time she was getting all mixed up with this attractive yoga instructor, Daniel, and her husband, Steve. So I found that very interesting, that you were portraying them as being really good at helping other people, but not so good at helping themselves with the same issues.
This is very interesting because I think we do this a lot. When we're subjective in a situation, it's sometimes very hard to become objective and kind of step out of it because we're so immersed in the emotions of it that it kind of draws us right into the drama of our own story, and it's hard to gain perspective. And that's why, thank goodness, we have people around us who truly care for us, who can help us gain perspective and say, no, now, and they flip it for them like Cassandra did for Mark, and saying, if Greg had treated you like this from the very, very beginning, would you have fallen in love with this person? And his answer, of course, was, no, I wouldn't. And I was like, well, he came at you from a very different place. He loved bombed you, and he was charming. He was, you know, but that was all just a manipulation. So I think that's why it's good to have people around us who care and can nurture us and support us, because we can't always see things clearly when we are so immersed in them. But through time and through experience, we learn more and more how to be our own counsel and to gain perspective. But it's a wonderful, beautiful thing when we can have people around us that can help us.
Yes, yes. I was also fascinated. I got fascinated with certain things that you put in your book. Your comments about Cassandra talking to herself, and I'll quote here, most people think when you're speaking to yourself like this, you're trying to talk yourself out of something. The reality is that you're doing the exact opposite. You're talking yourself into it, but somehow trying to make yourself feel better so that once you've done whatever it is you shouldn't be doing, you can always tell yourself later you made every effort not to do it.
Oh, the beautiful art of rationalization.
right. That was one, yes. I haven't run into.
You know, it's funny because I feel that as humans, we've become masters at rationalizing our way into things that we know better. It's like, and it's that, it I guess, and I really address it more in my sequel, it's really learning to listen to your intuition, because it's there and it's always speaking to you. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you just have to get beyond the chatter and recognize, mm-hmm, that the things that you're feeling and experiencing, they're not actually you. There's a part of you that is much higher than that, and it's a higher consciousness, and it's more evolved, and it's within every one of us. And if you're quiet enough and you listen to that, you can tap into that intuition that is speaking to you, saying, maybe not, you know, maybe not go that way. But so I guess that's what she was saying in that, is that, you know, she was rationalizing her way into something that her gut was telling her, this may not be the wisest choice for you, but she, mm-hmm, went ahead and, as you know, did it anyway. So.
Yeah, well, that's also very human. But that's interesting. You know, her marriage seemed to be a very good one. I thought You portrayed her husband, Steve, as being extremely sensitive to her needs at the time her brother, Andy, was diagnosed with cancer. And I think even overall, I found that the people in the in your book, the characters, were really focused on caring and loving, caring about one another and loving as much as they possibly could. And that was really refreshing.
Yes, yes. And Stephen was like that. And he completely adored his wife. And I think what happens sometimes when you go through, you know, things like cancer and death and grief can either tear families apart or they can pull them together. But sometimes there is a tearing apart first. And it was so funny that I read this quote to my husband the other day that I absolutely loved, and I hope I don't massacre it, but it said, couples who are, and it's in quotes, meant to be together are those who go through things that are meant to tear them apart and come out even stronger than before.
Oh, and wow.
When I had read that, I got chills. And it's for me and what we had gone through, you know, there was the death of my brother in 2012 in July. And then 4 months later, it was not only my father, but 3 days later, my husband's mother. So it was just this cascade of things that were happening in our life that were just like, in a sense, tearing us apart, because we tend to withdraw and emotionally shut down and not want to feel, and we become afraid because if I love too much, I'm going to hurt too much. This hurts too much. And so we have all these conflicting emotions going on inside of us. So we can, and not saying everybody does, withdraw and push away those that love us the most. And then we sometimes seek something outside of us to be a balm to our senses, so to speak, but that reaching out to something outside of you is never going to give you the inner peace and balance that we truly need. That's only something we can give to ourselves.
I totally agree with you. My license plate is EMOTBAL for emotional balance.
Absolutely. Yeah, I love that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And speaking of that, there are lots of emotions that come up in the course of the book. Cassandra's entranced by Daniel. She's devastated by the cancer and death of her brother. She's both comforted and jostled in her marriage relationship with Steve. And she writes to Andy about fear as they're working to face his cancer. She says, "The intensity of the emotions is overwhelming at times, but it's then that I realize those thoughts come from a place of fear. Things like this, especially this, need to be faced head on and with no shortcuts." And the way that struck me is it sounds like something that you learned through the illness and death of your own brother. And it's something that we all can use everywhere. We don't have to wait for death to come up on us to use it. Comment?
No, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely not. I remember when he was diagnosed and that passage that you just spoke of, I wanted to run away as far away as possible because I was so overwhelmed with sadness. But then it's like that other, I'm saying all these things, wherever you go, there you are. There's no running away from it. It's always going to be there with you. And the suppression of unexpressed emotions is one of the most dangerous things we can do because they will manifest physically at some point in time. So we need to learn to face these things head on. There are no shortcuts. It's like trying to go out and run a marathon without training. You have to take it step by step. You have to learn that it's not if it's going to hurt, it's when it's going to hurt. It will hurt. But that is what makes us so profoundly beautiful as humans, is that we have the capacity, and just like animals in the animal kingdom, we have the capacity to feel deeply. So the opposite of it is true. Like I was talking about the opposites being equal, and sometimes I believe that love and joy and has a greater or equal power to that. So just learning that life is an ebb and a flow, that things are going to happen and things are impermanent. We're not going to be in this constant state of bliss, and we're not going to be in a constant state of sadness. There is a balance that can be found in there, and sometimes we are going to be hit and feel like we've been hit over the head with a 2x4 just when we think we got a grip on things, and something happens, a song comes on, you know, something. But the important thing is not to panic. It's to relax. It's like when a surfer gets, you know, any experienced surfer will tell you, if they get knocked off their surf by a big wave, the best thing to do is to become like a rag doll and not resist it, and just kind of go with it. Just become like a rag doll. It's okay. Don't panic. You will surface. And that's what I've learned.
That's really great. Yes. I also love this statement from Cassandra. She says, I've realized life is too short and too long for relationships that create a burden or heaviness in my heart. I don't have room for emotional manipulations or doing things out of guilt or shame. At some point, you either become buried alive by all that shit, so you may as well be dead, or you turn that shit into compost and grow yourself a beautiful garden. I'd love that.
Yes, it's so true, isn't it, though? I mean, it's we start to learn to live our life when we go through different experiences, and hopefully sooner, I'm trying to teach this to my children, sooner rather than later, to really gauge their relationships, because they're so important. I do believe that the company that we keep, I believe environment is stronger than will sometimes, and the company that we keep is very, very important. And to surround ourselves with people who energetically support us and want our greatest and highest good for us as we want that for them, without manipulations, without using guilt, and without using mental mind games out of control and to keep us down. And unfortunately, there are people like that, and I hate to say that. And we just need to define for ourselves, who are those people in our lives who tend to be a little bit more toxic to us? They may not be toxic to somebody else, but maybe they're toxic to our emotional sensibilities, and to eliminate them and not to feel guilt over that. It's okay, because that's going to make you more fully aware and alive with those, like your children, the people who really matter in your life. And that has been my experience, that the elimination of emotional vampires or people who drain my energy and I walk away feeling not so good from has really made me a much more whole person and a much more confident person, and one who's been able to stand in my truth in a much more authentic way.
I totally agree with you on that. I started working on what we now call codependence, then was called manipulation, and I learned to call energy sapping more than 40 years ago. And once I understood how it happened and where it comes from and how to recognize it and how to get out of it, it was like I had a new life. And I wish more people had that intelligence. And I did note that you were pulling people out of manipulation. And there was actually not very much of it in your book at all, considering how people usually put things in novels. So I appreciate that. Wow.
Yeah.
Someday I'm going to sit down or maybe you'll tell me now, where did you get all this wisdom?
You know, it's really just been through my life experience. And unfortunately, there's many things that I had to learn. I don't want to say unfortunately, no, I think very fortunately, actually, I take that back. I had to learn these things, and sometimes the hard way, and it's because, you know, we come from a certain place, and sometimes when people come at us from a different place entirely, because we come from a different place, we don't see it coming at us. So the manipulation is covert, and so we don't, but once you recognize it, and once it's happened to you, it's almost like there's a death. I mean, I can compare it to a death when you realize that something like that has happened to you, when you've been so emotionally manipulated and almost degraded in a way and humiliated and duped. And once you realize it and you gain that awareness, it rarely could happen to you again, because then you can see it. It's not that you become jaded. It's that you become aware, because I won't let anything jade me or any other human jade me. I still have my innocence and excitement and joy for life, and that's not something anyone can take away from me.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Well, it's really wonderful. Here's another wonderful thing that you said. When Andy dies in the night, Cassandra has this to say: whoever says you can't hear hearts breaking has never experienced the loss of someone close to them. It's the loudest and most profound sound you'll ever hear. And you state in your book that the family is staring at Andy, who's now gone, with a mixture of relief, sadness, disbelief, and most of all, love. And you've already spoken about emotions and how important it is to move them, and I totally agree with you on that. But talk a little bit about heartbreak, please.
You know, it's one of the most intensely, you know, I wrote this thing the other day, and if you don't mind, I'd like to it's very short, but I think it kind of describes what we're talking about here. Go ahead.
As you lead into this, you've been talking about doing this blog. Will you tell us how to find it?
It's on my website, ninacpayne.com, and also I have many poems and essays there that deal about, that talk about
right.
surrender and grief, and even unrequited love and passion and all of that. So, yes.
Good.
Yeah. So, this thing that I wrote really describes what we're talking about here. It says, to hurt from a place deep inside that is honest, quiet, and without desperation is one of the most serene, intensely beautiful places one can visit. Just be careful not to dwell there. So heartbreak, while on the one hand, can be just so extremely painful. I describe it in my book as belly flopping into a bed of nails every 20 seconds. And Cassandra is wondering, how does anybody feel this much pain and get to the other side of this? But I think once we quiet ourselves, once we recognize that this pain that we're experiencing is signaling something, it's like, it's almost like this, it's waiting for this switch to turn on of something much more, it's going to be more illuminating for us. It's going to be something, a much brighter light is going to happen in our life, and we have to believe that. I have this one blog that I wrote called The Brighter Side of Grief, because there is a bright side to grief, and there, through the heartache, there is so much that we can learn from ourselves and learn who we are and our strengths, the capacity. We are so strong, we don't even realize. And it's by going through that type of heartbreak and heartache that we learn just how strong and invincible we are.
Yes, and just to add to that, a simple comment. About 15 years ago, someone close to me had their fiancé commit suicide, and she called me, and I kept saying to her, on the earth, in order to get beyond something, you must go through it. And that's what you're talking about, too. She didn't understand it at first, but once she got through it, she understood it.
Yes, and that's the thing, is we've been trained, I think, for a lot of, since childhood, I think, for some of us, again, I'm not speaking across the board, but to learn to suppress, you know, to just kind of, I hate to use the term, suck it up, but there is none of that. You have to learn to really, like you said, is exactly the right verbiage, is to go through. There's no going around, jumping up, digging a hole down. You just need to go through it peacefully, quietly, serenely, with integrity and with grace. And you come to the other side of it, and you just say, wow, I did it.
That's a wonderful philosophy. So we're up to our second break. I'm talking with Nina Payne, who is author of Moments in Time. You can find out more about Nina at ninacpayne.com. Call us at 888-498-0570 if you have comments or questions you'd like to add. We'll be right back. You're listening to Full Power Living.
Is it for you to ask directly for what you really want, to take responsibility graciously and willingly for your mistakes, or to relate with others because it's fun instead of because you need something from them? Most people believe manipulation and codependence are normal behaviors for adults. They may be common, but they're not normal. Manipulative behaviors really are designed to be part of childhood, to be put away as things of the past when we become adults. So if you're ready to let manipulation and codependence be part of your past, then get the mini course I've created for you, Ending Codependence, The Bottom Line. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, offering you a formula that you can follow for creating healthy, manipulation-free, and lasting intimate relationships. I also give you the tools and principles that you can use to develop lasting immunity to codependence. Get Ending Codependence today at www.emotionalpro.com. That's emotionalpro.com.
Welcome back to Full Power Living. I'm Eileen Dillon talking with Nina Payne, who is author of Moments in Time. And once again, our call-in number is 888-498-0570. Nina, I was touched by how loving the focus of your book is. And you had this to say about family. Through Cassandra, yes, we all have our differences, but it's the common denominator that we must never lose sight of that keeps the bonds of family and friendship strong. It doesn't mean that we're always going to agree or even like each other. It just means that when all seems to be going south, we unite, are strong, and are there for each other. We are family, we are friends. Perfect, no. But there for each other matters most. Yes.
So true. And I think in any relationship, if you can, you know, ones that are healthy, of course, not ones mm-hmm. that are based on manipulation and control, healthy relationships with people with differences and different viewpoints, there are common denominators. And like in our case, going through that time, it was, and in the story, it was Andy, and in our life, it was Charlie, and pulling together as a family for Charlie, and he was our common denominator. But there is always a common denominator, and it's finding that and really trying to water that. It's like they say, the grass is greener where you water it. You know, water that, nurture that, take care of that. In my own, you know, little family unit of my husband and my two children, when things are, you know, kind of a little bit chaotic and we're not communicating as well as maybe we should, we try to pull back and say, wait a minute, you know, this is what's important. This is what we agree on. Let's focus on that. And mm-hmm. the other, let's just let go. It's okay.
Mm-hmm. I call that looking for the love. Wait a minute. What happened to the love? Where's the love? Let's find.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
Yeah. Well, Cassandra also says later in the book, I've decided I don't want to wait for death to be free. I want it in the here and now. Mm-hmm. I like that quote.
Yes. You know, my brother's death and my father's death really opened up my eyes to that. You know, I saw my brother become more free once he left this earth. But while he was here, he was living his life according to other people's standards and expectations of him. And, you know, I'm not talking about Andy and Cassandra now, I'm talking about me and my brother. And that really opened my eyes that I'm not going to live enslaved by a certain standard that I don't even necessarily agree with. You know, I'm mm-hmm. going to live life based on my terms and what I carry and what are my values that help me redefine for myself who I am. I, besides a mother, a wife, you know, with all the labels, who am I? What, where are my passions? What are my desires? What serves my highest and greatest good? But coming from a place of love as I extend that out to those who love me mm-hmm. and to those I love.
That's called living consciously, I think. And, you know, what's so delightful is so many more of us are getting there finally.
You know, we're beginning to do it. It is. I think that's a shift in consciousness. I do. I think that as a society as a whole, there's this beautiful shift of consciousness of people really becoming more, having more empathy, more compassion, more. And it's that word awareness. If we just operate from awareness and consciousness, like you were saying, just being more conscious of what we say and how it may affect those around us, it's just a much, much better way of being in this world, I believe.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was working, I've been a therapist for 43 years, and I was working with someone on a Skype session recently who suggested that he would often say to himself, "You stupid, you did that wrong," and so forth. And so I talked to him about self-talk, about how we talk to ourselves, and the fact that it changes the chemistry in our bodies when we talk that way to ourselves. So we're actually, when we're living the way you're talking about, and the way you often portray in your book, Moments in Time, we're changing our chemistry for the better also, which means our health is better and our relationships are better, and probably we're even more successful.
Absolutely. And I do believe that we can rewire so many things from our past and that are in our consciousness and in our brain just by the way we speak to ourselves, even silently, the things we don't say out loud, and to catch ourselves when we're doing it. And so, yes, absolutely. I mean, the way we say, I mean, we're listening. So be careful what you say to yourself. There's certain things that since my kids were very young, I wouldn't allow them to say. I'm like, no. Don't use words like stupid or I can't or never or no, you can and you will and you're not. So it's important how we speak to ourselves. I mean, you wouldn't speak to somebody else like that. I think most people wouldn't. So why are you so harsh? I think we're our harshest critics. We're harder on ourselves and less forgiving and less compassionate for ourselves than we are anyone else. And we need to offer that gently and kindly to ourselves.
That's true. You know, becoming aware of what you're saying. My son, who's now 38 years old, hard to believe, but when he was about 13, he had a little bird that flew away across the neighbor's hedge and into a wooded area on another neighbor's lot. And he asked me to come help find the bird with him. And the whole time, as we first started out looking for the bird, he was crying and he was saying, "I've lost my bird. I've lost my bird." And I said to him, "Wait a minute, there's something not right here. I think you need to make up your mind. If you've lost the bird, what are we doing out here looking for it? And if you haven't lost it, then you need to start saying something else." And he said, "I haven't lost it." And so I told him, "So start saying it's my bird and it's coming back to me." And he still cried, but he said it. And the long and the short of it is, not only did that bird come back to him by the next day, but a friend who was staying with us went out and bought a matched pair, and he ended up with three birds instead of one.
Aww. That's lovely. I like that.
So another thing that Cassandra says to her friend Mark is, we don't always get it right. Sometimes we do, sometimes we don't. And this, you said before, life isn't a test. Life is an exploration. No one will be handing out report cards at the end of all this. All that really matters when all is said and done is our intention and how we love those around us and how we were loved. That's all that's ours. Everything else stays here. That was very profound. That is very profound.
Yes, and that's a truth I carry so close to my heart. There really isn't anything else that truly, truly matters other than how we are loving and living in the moment with each other. And that is key, I believe, to the balance of what we've been talking about. I think kind of the theme throughout this is just finding that balance of, just if we come from that place of love, how wrong can we go ever if we think about it truly? And it seems like such a simple statement, but it really has so much depth to it because it's so layered. And in so many ways, and it's sometimes hard to get to because we have pride and ego and all of these things that sometimes come in the way of that. But being able to be humble to when we are, especially with our children, if for those out there who have children, to be able to say sorry when we as parents have maybe reacted harshly and in a way that was not fair. And to be able to approach your children with that teaches them humility and teaches them compassion. And wow, my mom can say sorry to me. My dad can say sorry to me. I can offer that also to others, and just keeps us more grounded and more compassionate as humans to each other.
That's great. Let me get back to death. Cassandra says, death is closure, but while we're living, there is no closure. There's acceptance, evolution, growth, transformation, but no closure. And she's talking about how life holds open the door for hope, whereas death faces us with no hope because the possibilities have gone by. Death gives us only the option of acceptance and surrender. And I wanted to just hear from you, what do you think would happen if we took only the option of acceptance and surrender without having to face or go through death?
Well, I think we're all going to. We're all going to have to experience the death of someone close to us. And just knowing that and learning to accept and surrender to that is, I don't much care for that word closure. I think it's overused. I'm not sure when it was actually coined. People seek this closure, and no, the people that go before us, I believe, are still all around us, and to need some sort of, I guess I don't really understand that word very much. I understand the word accepting the loss, surrendering to the loss, embracing the loss, and maybe that's what closure means. I don't know. But for me, it was accepting, it was surrendering, it was embracing. And also, like Cassandra says to her children, the way we honor those who passed before us is by living our best life. That's how we honor their memory. It's not by hiding in a cocoon and becoming a hermit and reclusive and bitter. And, you know, it's interesting how death can make people very, very bitter. And we can't ever say, why me? Why anyone? You know, I mean, why, if anybody just walks around the halls of Children's Hospital and sees these little babies going through cancer and so many other illnesses, why them? I mean, why anyone? So we need to get away from self-pity and move into acceptance that this is life, and life is not grief. It's like I said in one of the things, and it's one of my favorite passages in the book, is grief does not discriminate. It doesn't care how much money you have. It doesn't care how beautiful you are. It doesn't care. Nobody is exempt from grief. Nobody's exempt from death. It's going to happen to all of us at some point. How we deal with it is our choice.
Well, we could stop there, but I'll ask one more question. Do you have a particular message or learning that you hope your reading audience will get from learning about the characters in Moments in Time?
You know, I hope they learn that there is a certain humanity to all of us that is fallible, and somebody may seem unapproachable and just virtuous and this and that. We all can falter no matter what. And learning to have forgiveness for ourselves and learning to have forgiveness and compassion for others, even when it may not be in accordance to our own standards, even though when sometimes decisions are made that are the tough decisions, just learning to have acceptance and compassion for others. And again, it's that word, to try not to judge people, and just to love, just to come from that ultimate, most beautiful place that we can come from, which is our greatest and our highest, is to come from a place of love towards one another. And again, I don't think we can ever go wrong when we do that.
Well, I think, Nina, that Moments in Time reveals, that's part of what you reveal, what real love can do in human lives, even through the worst of times. So I want to thank you for writing it. Do you have a goal for when your sequel is coming out?
I'm hoping towards the end of the year. So I'm working on it, and I'm loving this part of it because it takes the audience, especially ones who have read Moments in Time, in a direction I don't think they would be expecting. So it really is drawing on a lot of the lessons and of Cassandra's journey and where and how she has evolved. So it's a beautiful, it's just a beautiful passage of time watching her as she evolves and goes through all these different emotions. And it's funny because I don't really know where the story goes either. I just kind of write it. I have obviously ideas, but there's certain subplots and things that happen along the way that's just fascinating for me and to be on that ride as well. So I hope once it comes out, the reader will also enjoy Cassandra's journey and where it takes her.
Well, I stand in awe. I tried writing. I write nonfiction, but I tried writing some fiction one time and realized how intensely complicated it can be, how you have to keep everybody's separate life going inside of you so that you know how they'll respond to things and where their place is and all kinds of things. So I stand in awe.
Thank you.
Thank you for writing Moments in Time, Nina, and thank you very much for being with us here on Full Power Living today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure for me. Thank you.
Join us live every Thursday, 9 a.m. Pacific Time, noon Eastern, for more powerful experiences on Full Power Living. And remember to join me next week when I discuss whole body intelligence. That's WBI, not IQ or EQ, but BQ, with Steve Siskel. That's August 20th. I'm looking forward to sharing with you this unique and powerful way of opening to our own evolution. So Mike Cantor with Fresh Talk Media has been our producer today. Thank you, Mike, for now. I'm Eileen Dillon, your host, reminding you, pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become.
To Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.